Good morning. Today is Tuesday, the 21st of September. Is this the last day of summer?
I think so.
I think it is.
Yeah.
Wow, let's go hit the beach.
Yeah, fall is here.
Yes, it is indeed. Joining us this morning, Redax ace number one guy, Greg Foster.
I'm actually the only guy at Redax as well. So.
Yo, okay, if you're going to give it all up,
yeah,
never
right,
mind.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, all the mystique is gone.
Yeah.
Are you ready for our question this morning?
Yes, I remember last month I got it, so I'm hopeful that
this, all right, let's see if you get this one, smart guy.
Okay, here we go. Two in a row.
Why does a bride always stand on the groom's left?
It makes it easier to put the ring on. I don't know.
In the days when men often captured their brides from neighboring villages, a groom had to stay alert to the possibility of an attack by the bride's kinsmen or jealous sailors or suitors. This made it necessary for the bride's groom to keep his right hand free during the ceremony to fend off any such attacks. This, of course, meant that the bride had to stand on the left.
Well,
You were far more cultured than what you should have.
And I'm thinking that would be terrible for the left-handed...
Maybe
it's perhaps the bride of the left-handed knight would have some danger there from...
Take another one in the
jealous
back for the
suitors.
Team. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Little Game of Thrones red wedding action.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So what are you hearing around town? Is the economy doing what everybody was hoping? I mean, the indicators that we historically have used, help wanted signs, empty storefronts, are prevalent. They're kind of empty storefronts meant real poor business,
right?
Need labor, really strong business. Now we got both.
Right. Well, you know, last week the state sent out its monthly report on unemployment, and what it showed in Humboldt County was a drop in the unemployment rate, which is good. And what even made it better, and this is for August, what even made it better though was that there was an increase in the size of the labor force. So, you know, you have a numerator and a denominator there, and so you can play with the unemployment rate can be affected by changes in both of those numbers.
Yes.
Right. And so if your labor force is going down and your unemployment rate is going down, that's not necessarily a good thing. It means you have fewer people working. But the number of jobs increased by the number of employed increased by about 600. So the unemployment rate dropped, even though there was a increase in the labor force. So that's a good sign.
Where do they go? You look around. I've not seen any of the help wanted sites come down.
Well, no, we
where
have
are these 600 people. Where
yeah,
they go?
We still have a huge need locally for everything. I mean, there was an announcement last week from Wing Inflatables, and I've been talking to them some, and you know they're going to hire 45 more people to deal with this new Department of Defense contract, and that's their biggest concern. And talking to Andrew Brana there, it's we need good employees. We can do everything else, and they apparently have this new innovative product that's sort of changing the whole world there. Here we have this innovator and manufacturer that's located here and has been for many years. And they're getting ready to hire 45, and they need 45 more people to meet this contract. So we still have, and that's just one example. We have them all over, permits are, the EIR is going to be done and permits, hopefully approved, and the permits will be being pulled for the aquaculture farm, and they'll start, demolish. They got to start by just cleaning up that old pulp mill site, and that's going to be a huge project. And then the construction after that.
As somebody said about cleaning a lot, well, that'll keep Bobby busy. Don't even need a last name.
Right. Yeah. 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 Sunday afternoon demolition. Ultimately they'll need about 150 employees there. And then there's also, there's ancillary businesses that could benefit. So, when people say, well, what's your biggest concern, I guess, or the biggest issues is that we're in a unique spot right now, I think, in Humboldt County that we haven't been in so long, maybe even since the end of World War II, where we're trying to figure out how to manage the coming growth. And you know, and I didn't even mention, and this is a huge one, I think, in sort of game changing, is this Polytechnic in Humboldt State, right? And they're talking about doubling the student body in 7 years. I mean, you know.
But at least there's a little bit of a ramp up time there.
Yeah, although, you know, the speed at which we do things around here sometimes, seven years.
We're still behind the eight ball, yeah.
Exactly,
yeah.
You know. And I mean, I even look at the airport, right? You know, we did over 12,000 employments in August. That's a record ever, you know, for the airport. And to sort of create a little preview here, we have more service coming. We'll be making some announcements over the next couple weeks. So there's just, it's just, we're in a position now that I feel like we need to be changing our mindset a little bit about, you know, how we react, how quickly react, and really what we're trying to accomplish here, which is we need to figure out how to manage all the growth that's coming. And when I say manage, that doesn't mean restrict or regulate necessarily. It means manage, finding places for people to live,
anticipate,
transportation,
and
right, yeah. All this stuff, and it's not a bad problem to have. Quite honestly,
it's a new one for us.
Generations. Exactly. Yeah. When I started at REDEC, it was, you know, oh gosh, let's see if we can get our unemployment rate under double digits. You know,
and, well, that's back when crab season. In the timber industry, we had these seasonally adjusted.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, your unemployment rate would fluctuate wildly during the year, right?
And, see, I haven't forgotten everything.
Yeah, no. Yeah, you're doing pretty well. So, you know, that requires new thinking, both in terms of approach and how we do things regionally.
Perhaps, not new. How about more risky thinking?
Well, that, absolutely.
I've been kind of pondering this one for the last little bit, and what we have done, the government housing stuff, the government subsidies and the types of housing, those are all guarantees. Those are all safe.
Yeah.
That's 100% locked down, zero risk. Thank you very much. Okay. Same thing pretty much with the college kids.
Yeah.
Okay. Pretty much locked down, guaranteed you're going to fill those spots. What we're talking about now actually like implies it's not a guarantee. It's risk. These people aren't here yet that need these homes.
Right, right.
Oh, my, oh, my. Well, building on spec or developing or whatever, it ain't a guarantee.
Right, right.
It's kind of called the free market.
Well, you know, and I make my living playing in that in a sense because we make loans, right? And you know, it's all about taking risk in my business.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Foster from REDEC. Greg, the concept of risk embracing, very few, I forget what the percentage is, are risk embracers.
Right.
Most people are not, okay, but you get a higher percentage in the business community, in the entrepreneurial area.
Right, of course.
You know, love to have stability, but, okay, risk embracing, taking is part of that game.
Right.
Why aren't we seeing more of that with the housing right now? Is it land use plans that are in the way? Is it funding that's in the way? Is it just lack of having folks around here that know how to do that stuff that's in the way?
It may be all of that and some more. You know, the thing that allows you to take risk is certainty, right? I mean, some level of certainty. And so you'll see what happens when when economic indicators, there's uncertainty in the market or uncertainty in regulations, people tend to take less risk, right? Because risk is really about risk management, right? You take that risk, but you want to manage your risk in such a way.
Yeah, mitigate it as much as you can.
Right, and so the less you know, the lower you are in your risk profile, right? It's like, I don't know. Now, if you know what the really know what the risks are and you can manage that and have some certainty, then you can do it. So so we've had, you know, in the last year or so, we've had this huge demand, but then we've seen, you know, materials prices and labor prices just spike. And there's been some, you know, easing of that, obviously, lately. But there's also the uncertainty of the government process. How long does it take? You know, what will all be required? You know, the more uncertainty you build into a system, the less risk anybody's going to take, right? Because, again, lack of knowledge will lead you to taking less risk. And so, you know, even in banking and where I play, we know we're taking a risk. The worst answer to me when you ask a business person who's wants a loan, you know, what about this thing? And they say, I don't know. And it's like, I don't want to hear I don't know. Or
I don't know for certain.
I don't know for certain, but I think, or here's, but I've been thinking about it. You know, the thing is if they don't know because the information doesn't exist, or they don't know because they haven't even looked at that, then we need to go back and say, okay, because we're taking this risk together. We better know everything that we should know or could know.
But some of that information is proprietary. I had a great discussion last week about, it was just a flash, doing some training with a new guy.
Yeah.
And I said, so who do you think's the number one pizza seller in Humboldt County?
Roundtable or something, you know.
Well, and then you get into the pizzas in the grocery stores.
Right. Oh, sure.
Okay. And then the pizzas like the Take and Bakes and those guys. Right. And then you've got Costco.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So is it, you know, nobody measures pizza by tonnage, but let's use that as a reference.
I did in college.
Okay. Yeah. How would you find that out?
Right.
It would be
right.
Very difficult if somebody was looking at putting in a new pizza location.
Right.
Who is what? And how finally do you delineate your market?
Right.
Are we talking about ethnic cuisine or are we talking about fast food?
Right. Pizzas? Exactly. You got to know all that.
All that kind of stuff. So when you ask that question, you know, if somebody hasn't thought about it, okay, totally different then. You know, this is kind of what I think, but there's so many variables in there that there's really no way to know. Leakage would be another one in retail.
Right.
Who really knows? Because UPS isn't going to just go any of my numbers.
Right.
And the Postal Service probably doesn't, you know, the feds probably can't even find the numbers.
Well, and you know, what we look for is someone who's at least aware of that. So you can't know everything, right? But let's say you're using your pizza example. The person got a Costco membership and sat and watched how many pizzas they sell in an hour and did that over a sample time, right? You know, morning.
Until they got thrown out as being a stalker.
Right, exactly.
Or counting pizza boxes.
Right, yeah. Knowing that, right, you know, and knowing, you know, getting that business intelligence down so that you know, everything you can know, you do know, right? Especially if you're taking a risk with your own personal, you know, finances or in our case, you know, using our loan money. And we do this with the airport. So we do these market studies. We just did one of the presentation was given to the Board of Supervisors this week on it, where we, and fortunately in the airline industry, because so much of it's regulated, the airline industry isn't regulated, but they have to provide a lot of information. The service isn't regulated, I should say. We can do these studies that show for a given time period, and we looked at 2019 because 2020 certainly wasn't worth studying, and we could see how many people were flying that live in our market. So we can look at the postal codes basically in our market definition, and because we can get access to ticket data, we can tell how many people from which zip code in our market area are flying to where and from which airport. And so what we found was, even though with all this increase, we're only still capturing about 70, we're losing about 70% of our air traffic to other airports.
Really, still two-thirds?
In 2019. Driving. Now, we think we've recaptured a lot of that, this year because we've added so much more to
flexibility.
You know, we have two different airlines flying into Southern California. Now we have Phoenix and all these other things, but we can take that data and then by really studying it, then we can tailor our presentations to the airlines about investing in a new service here. And so that's what we do. But you know, the market research part of what we do with the airport and Fly Humboldt is big. I mean, people see the Facebook posts and all those parties and everything else. We spend most of our time looking at these huge data tables and trying to figure out.
But the information's there.
It is.
You just have to sift through it.
Yeah, we're
and I think that's the distinction here with the housing is, okay, we know there are these bodies.
Right.
Okay, what is going to be there? You know, if you took, 25% for the housing cost of an income,
right.
What's going to be the compensation of these new jobs?
Right.
What can
right.
they afford? What's going to be the price rate yep. at that point? If it's going to take me 2 years to build this thing, whatever,
exactly.
developmental fees, oh, my God, what's going to happen?
Exactly.
You
know,
so you got all these outside things that you can't really predict.
Right.
But yet we still need this inventory
need
stock.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And that's another area that's got very high cost. And the processes in programs are very complicated. And
well, we'll talk about higher math when we come back.
Fair enough.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Foster from REDEC. Greg, before the break, we were talking a little bit about risk and getting market knowledge, however much we can. And we've got this housing demand that's current. We've got this housing demand that's coming.
Right.
Okay. So it's not just a matter of making your house available and somebody buying it because you got to go somewhere also.
Right.
Are there places, are you hearing that are we going to be getting the development community? Not the big boys, the Dancos and Pacific Builders and guys like that are already working and they're up to their gills already.
Right, right.
But I'm thinking of the ones that have the family names historically
right.
that aren't here or aren't doing what they used to do. Are we going to start to see a reemergence of those people? Those contractors moving into our area as others are fleeing from other communities and relocate here? Is the county and the city jurisdictions and their planning departments and building departments, are they streamlining so that this stuff can happen easier, quicker, smoother? Are we getting ready for this
right.
that's coming?
You know, in some ways we are, in some ways we aren't. And I've been kind of, hitting on this regional, and talking to my colleagues and counterparts, especially in the government who are around housing, saying, we need to have a regional response as much as we can. I mean, there's obviously policies and preferences for each of the individual jurisdictions that are their right to have. But, when we see, we're talking about doubling the size of the university. So what does that mean? We're going from 6 to 12 or, 7 to 15 or whatever it is. That's huge growth for us, right? And the university has gotten money from the state and they're going out to look at areas to develop. And, of course, the one that's been in the headlines for the last few years is the big old Craftsman's Mall site out there in Arcata. And so, at some point.
Which is not going to satisfy 10%.
They're going to do 800 beds, I think, is what the number is. And interestingly, of course, there was opposition to that, some of which was from the real estate and development industry. I'm not exactly sure why, but I can speculate. But, you know, ultimately the state bought the property and said, okay, we'll just not work with you guys.
We're doing it.
And we had this large, you know, we had this developer from out of the area who was coming to make this investment, take that risk, and do this. And so in that case, you know, there was a process problem. And basically this other developer who was going to buy the property and do their, you know, do their own financing and everything, left the area. Just said, okay, it's too hard to deal with. And so
that has been a regularly reoccurring
well,
theme
and, you know,
over the decades.
Right. And you know, I understand people being concerned about the impacts of their communities for these kind of developments. Absolutely. That being said, you know, the process there got so fouled up that that the university was able to just sort of go around it at this point because it'll be a state permitted facility, and what it's effectively done is gone back to the original 800, as I understand, potentially, but it's also delayed by 2 or 3 years the actual development of this thing, right? And you know, one of the things I've learned, and I used to 30 years ago I lived in Davis, was very much involved in planning and development and everything in Davis. And, you know, there's a difference between growth. I mean, you can see bad design and bad communities that are slow growing, and you see good communities and good design that are fast growing. It's
like sprawl is totally different.
Right. We have physical barriers that they don't have in the valley, for example, where we just can't sprawl out everywhere just because of mountains and rivers and the ocean
thing, yeah.
Yeah, the ocean's hard to build on. But we do have this pressure coming, and it's already, you know, COVID really accelerated, I think, but we were already seeing it, primarily climate and fire refugees, if you want to call them that.
Yeah, but the magnitude has certainly increased.
Right, and it's increasing. Well, and, you know, we saw it happening, and then here we have another fire season. I mean, every time we have a fire season, it's like, oh,
see,
you know, that's
new,
it. Yeah,
I've new been, faces at the grocery store.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Oh, we've been, you know, evacuated for the third time in 3 years. We're kind of done with it, right? And you know, you throw in the whole we can work remotely. I mean, I think Twitter said like 90% of their certain type. I can't remember exactly what part of their company it was, are going to be partially or completely at home going
forward.
Yeah, the
remote thing.
They're really just distributing everything. And so so that's occurring a lot. And then, you know, with the thing we didn't mention earlier, with Google, Facebook, fiber coming in from Singapore, and Vero Networks is, you know, boring and building their fiber that's going to end up going over 299. The data center is just about done. All of a sudden, we have this other piece of really important infrastructure that's going to be very attractive to, you know, smaller or even, you know, mid-sized companies who can, you know, not only have a high quality place to live that's still relatively affordable for the rest of the state, but with this incredible broadband pipe that you know is an amazing asset. And
there are a couple
from
of logical places, at least appear to be logical, that would be gearing up right now. The McKinleyville Industrial Park, right across from the airport.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you'd think that thing we'd be seeing raw wood and hearing saws and nails all over
right.
the place. Fortuna, the old PL site.
And I believe Fortuna is pursuing a study on developing that now. So,
yeah, there's some action going on there.
Yeah.
But you don't see the individual homes yet. And
right.
Is this just the lag period that it takes? Do we not have the money available? I mean,
so many things. You know, we had a conference a few years ago, and we invited some of the bigger developers, and they were just like, you know, we're as busy as we can be.
So it's got to be new people.
I mean, they have a labor shortage like everybody else, right? And
right.
So there's like, oh, we have this project. Are you interested in bidding? And it's like, you know, we just, you know, talk to me next year or if it ever. And
talk to me now for next year. Yeah.
You know, one of the owners was saying, you know, I'm getting older, and this is a relatively big local builder. And he said, I think my average age at my crew is like 45 to 50. And, you know, that's at some point you quit slinging hammers when you get old. And
right.
And so,
which really kind of speaks more towards the trades and those efforts,
right,
to get more people.
And it's a
catch
22, right? So we don't have the people to build the housing that we need to get the people here to do the housing. So it's a very complex issue, quite honestly. Yeah. And but what that means is that we need, you know, new thinking. We need to get everyone together and just say, we have this goal, right? We need to get these units built, and we're going to do everything we need to do to get it done.
KINS, news and information time, it's 8:43.
Hey, folks. Flying local is buying local. And with three airlines serving five destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly on American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time is 8:47. We're back talking shop this fine Tuesday with Mr. Greg Foster. Great, considering some of the different challenges that are out there, we've kind of talked a little bit about the housing stuff, the employment, unemployment, all those types of things. The airport is kind of an intriguing concept.
Yes.
You know, in the past, it was like, okay, we got to drag this dead anchor, this dead fish. We got to get it going.
Right.
We, you know, okay. Now it's almost as if it's leading.
Yes.
But is it really, or is it a barometer of what's going on around us? And for those of us, we just kind of lower our head, do our job. We don't think about it. We're surprised at all this interest,
right,
rather than seeing this thing as, no, this is a lag. This is stuff that's going on, but it's just not in the areas that are as visible as they were,
right,
historically.
Right. You know, it's a little of both. You know, the development of the airport and air service is not something that just happens, right? And the airport director and I go to these meetings. We've done pitches to all these airlines, you know, about the benefit of the facilities, why you fly here. I mentioned earlier that we do those market studies, and we prepare these really pretty detailed pro formas to present to the airlines. And it's really just a business attraction type thing, which is, if you invest in Humboldt County, here is all the data that we have, all the incentives we can provide, the facilities that we have, and we believe you'll be successful, right? And we do that, and these are, you know, again, pretty detailed presentations that we give. So you know, that being said, we lay that, you know, we have this consultant that's always out there listening for us. We have these personal relationships with the decision makers so that when the conditions arrive that really create the opportunity for growth, we're ready for it. We're ready to take advantage of it because we've already had these long conversations with people, and we can say, you know, you're going to do fine. Here's what we can do for you. And a REDEC, you know, spends money on marketing and, you know, pays for my time and all that. And the airport does its thing. And I think that's really important. Now, are we a barometer? Yes, we're a barometer. I mean, COVID did a couple of things, one of which cleared the decks, right? Hundreds of routes. I think it was 350 routes were canceled. And so the airports could rebuild their networks from scratch. And we had a conversation with United very early in the pandemic. And we said, okay, you know, we don't know what's going on in the short term, but what is your long-term thinking? And they said, you know, our economists and our, you know, guys that look down the road are saying we need to look at leisure destination airports, regional airports, and, you know, kind of smaller communities for a variety of reasons. One of which is they saw people thinking to leave this, wanting to get out of the cities, and, you know, to live and work, but also to travel. And so here we are, you know, we've got all of those things, right? And we have a airport runway that's long enough and all this other great stuff. What we need to do now, though, is, you know, our task really is starting around the support of all that new service. You know, we need to get food and beverage in the terminal. We need to have
the rental cars, the
rental car,
parking lots,
right, all and, that yeah. stuff, right? And, you know, that... And we need to do that quickly. We need a process that is quicker. It can react to business.
Is it easy to attract those types of industries?
I mean, just talking about food service, right? Food and beverage service. If I told you, we want a small food and beverage service, I can guarantee you anywhere between 500 and 800 people will be in front of your place every day in this building, and they're stuck.
Burn right. the toast.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So you have a guaranteed audience. You know, they're coming in. We know who they are. I mean, I can tell you exactly when people will be arriving every day based on the schedule. And so great data, right? And what do people want? They want coffee and
right. nibbles.
Quick to go. Yeah. Yeah, and all that. So I think it is. They just haven't done it. And I think they're moving towards that goal. But we need to have a the management is good. I mean, I think Cody does a great job, and is got a huge challenge.
Maybe just more nimble.
We need a management structure and process that's much more nimble. You can make decisions more quickly. You aren't within the county bureaucracy that takes a long time, if for no other reason that it's a big county. There's a lot of other
lots of stuff going
right.
on.
Right, and the airport having to compete for compete for attention and services from other county departments, while the industry is moving so quickly, it's just a mismatch. It's just a cultural mismatch.
Yeah, and speed is a little different too.
Well, business has to happen quick.
At the speed of business. Airplane.
Right, there you go. Supersonic, man.
There you go.
Supersonic.
See you next time. Thanks for coming by, Greg. See everybody tomorrow.